Thanks for hanging out with us, tuning in with us, having fun with us. Jackpot Jerry.
Murphy's Law. With me again, my good buddy, Chris Kuhn.
It used to be much easier when we were just talking about barbecue.
Thanks to all of our watchers, all of our subscribers.
All right, welcome to this week's episode of Murphy's Law with my good friend, Chris Kuhn. With me, as always, I drag him along with me on these crazy adventures. This week's episode is basically going to be talking about our Supreme Court leave to appeal, if you are. It's basically we petitioned the Michigan Supreme Court, revolving around all the nonsense from us staying open the end of 2020.
And the SparkNotes version, it's basically 68 pages of fuck you.
Yeah.
All bottled up in one bomb after another.
Is that how many it is? It's 68? Is it
68 pages?
Yeah. Yep. I have so many numbers in my head, I wouldn't be able to even keep track of that because, you know, TNV just came out with their appeal brief, which I think is 31 pages of complete nonsense. But anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about. But before we go any further, I want to tell everybody, if you haven't watched our episode, The Iron Pig Lawsuit 101, where we go and we do a little bit of whiteboard and talk about what our lawsuit and some of the things that were happening. A significant portion of what we're going to talk about today kind of relates to some of that conversation. We're going to expand on that with what we are now expanding our lawsuit.
Kind of shifting gears a little bit.
Short language for that lawsuit. It's not really a lawsuit necessarily, but we didn't start it. They started it.
They started it.
We're going to finish it. So what we're going to do is we're gonna take a quick break and we're going to switch cameras over so we can do some whiteboard action. But if you haven't watched it, go back and watch the first few minutes where we get on the whiteboard and we talk about rule of law, separation of powers, non-delegation, that kind of stuff, because that's where we're going to cut back to right here when Chris and I go over to the whiteboard. So give us just a couple of minutes and the magic of TV. We will meet you here in just a second.
All right, here we are over at the whiteboard. Quick change, it's getting a little warm here in the studio. So what we've done is put together some information from our petition to the Michigan Supreme Court, revolving around mainly our case, but including several other cases to help bolster what we're looking to have the Supreme Court answer, and ultimately kind of change course from what has been happening in the last 10, 15, some would say even longer than that number of years. So in going through everything, what we kind of have looked at is all these statutes right from the beginning. So if you haven't watched I think we mentioned it before, but if you haven't watched Iron Pig Lawsuit 101, one of our previous episodes from a month or two ago, go back and watch that because we talk about, you know, the rule of law, right? That's where we start, it's the rule of law. Separation of powers comes after that, right? This is where Chris and I always joke about, you know, kids in civics class should know the basics of separation of powers, the legislative, judicial, and executive branch. So what we started to examine was exactly what the language is in each of the separation of powers and the vesting clauses and some of these other things. So we looked at, you know, all the state constitutions are roughly based around the U.S. Constitution. So we started with the U.S. Constitution, and Article 1 describes the legislative powers. And I'll just read it really quick, the first sentence. We don't need to go into a whole lot, but all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States, which shall consist of a Senate and a House of Representatives. Article 2 goes on and tells the executive power shall be vested in the president, terms, those kind of thing, terms limits, and then judicial power of the United States shall be vested. Vested is a key word in a lot of these. That's what we focus in on now is this word vested. These ideas that are vested in each branch of government. And of course, the judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and such inferior courts, blah, 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 as we kind of described in the last episode about the court hierarchy and everything like that, right? So that's the U.S. Constitution, right? Those three articles. Michigan Constitution virtually says the exact same thing. So Separation of powers is Article 3 of the Michigan Constitution. And it just simply says the powers of government are divided into three branches, legislative, executive, and judicial. No person exercising powers of one branch shall exercise powers properly belonging to another branch except as expressly provided in this Constitution. That is it right there. Separation of powers. You can't do another branch's job. Pretty simple. Cut and dry. Article 4, the very next article after we're talking about the three branches of government. It's no surprise that the first one, the first branch they talk about is the people's branch, the legislative branch. And all it says is, except to the extent limited or abrogated by Article 4, Section 6, Article 5, Section 2, the legislative power of the state of Michigan is vested in a House of Representatives and in a Senate. Article 5, the very next one, executive powers. We're talking about the governor, right? So in our handy-dandy little board that we've used several times, right, the legislative rights, now we're talking rights laws, now we're talking about the executive branch. And Article 5 says, except to the extent limited by Article 5, Section 2, Article 4, Section 6, the executive power is vested in the governor, right? Pretty simple. The next one, judicial power, right? These are the folks that interpret the laws that are presented or written by the legislature. Except to the extent, blah, 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 the judicial power of the state is vested, what do you know, vested exclusively in one court of justice, which shall be divided into the Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, District Courts, Inferior Courts, yada, yada, yada. Vested shows up in all three of these. Now you'll notice in all three of those simple definitions of these branches, does it say anywhere that they can divest any of that, right? It's vested. It doesn't say that they can divest themselves. The governor can't divest her power and give it to the judicial branch. Can't do it. Well, we argue, and certified questions that knocked down the Emergency Powers of the Governor Act, what was argued there was that the legislative branch gave too much authority to the executive branch. It was too broad. And in their lawsuit and in our lawsuit, we were able to get favorable rulings that said that the language contained in those laws, and the statutes were too broad. Now, we talk about intelligible principles, right? So we've talked about our articles, our separation of powers, each one, the vesting clauses. So now we talk about the language that actually comes into these things. And over the years, there's been this thing called the intelligible principle test. And that was what was used by the justices in certified questions. They went in and they looked at specifically the words reasonable and necessary. And I believe it relates in their case to the governor has the authority. And again, I'm just ad-libbing. The governor has the authority to promulgate rules and laws that are reasonable and necessary to control an emergency, emergency powers of the governor. That was wiped out because the Supreme Court justices found that reasonable and necessary when applied with the Intelligible Principle Act was too broad. And that was several dozen pages long. And they still said that it's too broad, gave the governor way, way, way too much power. The legislative branch delegated too much of their lawmaking and rulemaking powers to the executive branch, so much so that it shut down our entire state. Supreme Court comes in October 2020, says, nope, can't do it, unconstitutional. 3 days later, the state, the executive branch, turns to a health law, right? So when we're looking back here at the executive branch, we have all of these agencies, the Liquor Commission, the Department of Agriculture, the Health Department, the DNR, MyOSHA, all these things all report to the governor in the executive branch. So they came and they turned to the health law. And in the health law, the intelligible principle that was looked at was the words, the health director may limit the gathering of people for any reason. And then goes on to say, and many established procedures to basically enact that. Judge Hunter here in Otsego County, just over a year ago, also ruled this unconstitutional, partly citing in recertified questions among a couple of other cases. So this is where we're talking about this intelligible principle. And this is where we leave these words up for interpretation. And what's important to know about this certified questions that knocked down the emergency powers back in 2020, they talk about this intelligible principle and cite a couple of Supreme Court cases and a couple of Supreme Court justices. And I'll read really quick. This is pretty long, but the intelligible principle test has been subject to growing criticism by some members of the United States Supreme Court in recent years for failing to sufficiently protect the separation of powers. And it goes on to cite a case, Department of Transportation against the Association of American Railroads, and that was a 2015 case. It's not that long ago that the justices are talking about the separation of powers is getting kind of muddy. So they go on to further talk about some other things and how it's just kind of been diluted over the years. Here's something of note. Let's see. Recognizing that the power to fashion legally binding rules is legislative, we have nevertheless classified rulemaking as executive or judicial power when the authorizing statute sets out an intelligible principle to guide the rulemaker's discretion. I would return, this is Justice Thomas speaking now, I would return to the original understanding of the federal legislative power and require that the federal government, this is a federal case, the federal government create generally applicable rules of private conduct only through the constitutionally prescribed legislative process. The people's branch, right? They write it. That's how it should be. It should not be written by the executive branch and enforced by the executive branch. That's how we get tyranny, as James Madison talked about a few years ago. So lastly on this part, let's see, he says that, nonetheless, the intelligible principle test remains as the dominant expression of what is required to sustain a constitutional delegation of powers. Now, this is the next one that we talk about. A lot of podcasts, a lot of stuff has been talked about this non-delegation doctrine. And simply put, what that means, delegating authority from one branch to another. This was a violation of delegation. They should have never delegated this much authority to the executive branch when they passed the Emergency Powers of the Governor Act back in 1930-something. So it is now gone, unconstitutional. It's even removed from the state constitution now. So we're talking about non-delegation doctrine, right? So basically, we have two cases in this state alone now that are saying the legislature gave too much power. Now, they may have been well-intended in both counts. One, the EPGA was in regards to riots. The Health Act, I believe, had something to do with Spanish flu or something like that. I can't remember now. But it's been added and modified over the years, blah, blah, blah. So here we are talking about non-delegation doctrine. And when we go back and we look at those vesting clauses in Articles 3, 4, and 5 of the Michigan Constitution, they say those powers are vested in each one. It never once says that it can delegate its power anywhere to any branch. It doesn't say it can divest its power to any other branch. So simply put, what we are now arguing is our case that we won, certified questions case, as well as an EPA ruling from this summer from SCOTUS, as well as an OSHA ruling from SCOTUS the same day that we got our ruling, January 13th or 14th of 2022, that OSHA ruling came down, and they are all saying the same thing. There is a non-delegation violation. We're going one step further, as Thomas did and Gorsuch cites in one of these other cases, the EPA case, separation of powers are now being diluted so much so that the executive branch is now creating their own rules, their own fines, their own penalties. as was witnessed by Marlena's Bistro, who was fined and put in jail. I was fined. They threatened me with jail. I closed up the restaurant because you can't close a restaurant or you can't run a restaurant from jail. And that's ultimately what we decided. Got an email and they said, hey, just to let you know, they can put you in jail for this stuff. And 10:30 at night, we pulled the plug and closed down the restaurant. And it ultimately paid off in spades. Here we are. So what we're looking at really is exploding the entire idea that a proper delegation even exists. We are arguing there is no such thing as any proper delegation from any branch, right? Legislator can't pull somebody over on the freeway because they think they're speeding and issue them a ticket, right? You can't make the rules and enforce the rules at the same time. A judge, even though we've seen many videos of judges, well, I'm Judge so-and-so, a judge can't do the same thing. They can't pull somebody over and issue a ticket and then turn around and show up in court and fine that same person. That's the definition of tyranny, right? You don't have any recourse. So what we're looking to do is do away with the entire idea of intelligible principles and delegation. There is no such thing as a proper delegation, right? All the rulemaking and lawmaking needs to be done in the legislature. That's why there's term limits. That's why we have two separate chambers. That's why it's the people's branch. We get to elect the people to make the laws that govern over us. It's the executive branch's job to enforce those rules. It's the judicial branch's job to interpret. So what we're going to do is make it even easier for these judges to interpret some of these rules and laws, right? So we're going to take and we're going to destroy the intelligible principle idea and non-delegation. So let me see where I'm at here in my notes. So we've talked about intelligible principles, delegation of power. So if we're not going by an intelligible principle that has been used for forever, right? What is an alternative? How do these justices and these judges then look at these things? How do they interpret if we're not going to use the intelligible principle act or intelligible principle? We lay out a pretty simple idea. Make sure I go to the right spot here. They might be jumping over. So what we are suggesting is, and so this is our brief. I don't even forget how many pages it is, 40-something. We call it a path forward, right? So we're going to tell them what's wrong with this and how to unwind these things and a different way to look at these laws. So what we suggest is the court should adopt the Constitution's plain text of vested, which you can rewind. It's pretty simple, right? Number two, this court should abandon the intelligible principle doctrine, right? We see why. Reasonable and necessary, that those are so broad. Depends on what the definition of is, right? I mean, everybody remembers that Bill Clinton nonsense.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is. Yes. It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yes.
It depends upon what the meaning of the word is.
Yes. Same with our case. The gathering of all people for any reason. That is an awfully broad scope that they use to define what we could and couldn't do. It was so many things beyond the gathering of people. Number three, we suggest this court should abandon the term delegation. And we give SCOTUS case, Michigan Supreme Court case, all of this recent historical case law for them to stand on to say, yeah, actually, James Madison, these guys were right. They have too much power and they're making way too many rules, as we now see, not just in Michigan, but federally, right? You know, everybody's crying about the gas, trying to outlaw gas stoves. That's just ridiculous. Good luck. We have so many gas appliances here in this restaurant. Good luck. Abandon term delegation. Next one, the court should rein in. I love this one. The court should rein in the fourth branch of government, the tyranny of the administrative state. That's what a lot of people forget about. We were fined by an administrative agency. The health department is an administrative agency, right? Sits under the executive branch. The liquor commission is an executive executive branch agency, MIOSHA, all these people that came in and gave us basically tickets and fines and threatened jail time were all in the executive branch. So we worked our way out of administrative court to get into the judicial branch so we could actually have the constitutionality looked at. So one of the things that we talk about a little bit is, you know, when we talk about tyranny, let me skip back here. Administrative law. Wouldn't you know, it's titled Risk It for the Brisket. Is administrative law unlawful? In this section, we go through and we talk about the various things that we went through. The health department, again, I don't need to reiterate, all these different agencies that we had to finally get through that suspended our liquor license for 90 days. Fined me $1,500, fined me $600, attempted to put me in jail. These are all things that you think a criminal would be charged with. And in some cases, with the liquor commission, serving without a liquor license is a felony, right? That's why we gave the liquor license back. I don't need a felony on my record. I've already been found in contempt of court in Ingham County and Lansing. I don't need more of that nonsense. So the real problem with administrative law is there is definitely a place for all of these agencies. The liquor commission has a job to do. MIOSHA has an important job to do. The DNR has an important job to do. We're not suggesting that these agencies should be eliminated. What we're suggesting is they shouldn't be given as much power as they have. They shouldn't have the power to be able to fine you and put you in jail without due process, right? There is some due process in administrative law, but as you can see, it takes a while to actually get to your due process. All of these things happen to us, and some of the language in these statutes that they cite using the health law say things like condition on the premises. With regards to liquor violations, let's say that there was prostitution happening or gambling, right? There was gambling going on. That's a condition on the premises. They were never able to actually prove that there was any COVID-19 at the Iron Pig. And in fact, it's on record. The health department admitted themselves on record that there had been no COVID. There had been not even contact tracing. And to this day, I still don't know of any. So the problem is that they're trying to come after us before we've done anything wrong, except for violating a couple of words in a statute that was dug up. So we are the embodiment of a small business being attacked by the administrative state. That's why we joke about taking down the fourth branch of government, the administrative state. So let's go back to the option. Find it in here. So if we move away from the intelligible principle, right, which is the idea of what do we think these words mean today? We move away from trying to figure out what these words mean, reasonable and necessary, limit the gathering of people for any reason. These types of things need more definition of them, on them. So instead of going to ambiguous things like the intelligible principle idea, we decide there are other states that have similar laws. We look at these things and we say, you know what? The executive branch, really what their job is fact-finding, right? So if you're speeding, state police pulls you over. We'll use state police because they are directly work for the executive branch. State police pull you over, and hopefully that trooper is going to tell you that you're going 5 miles over, 10 miles over, 15 miles over, whatever it happens to be. He's going to provide you with evidence, or has to at some point provide evidence that you were speeding or you committed some crime or whatever it is. There are facts, and whether or not you get to adjudicate that later is not the point. The idea is they have to have some kind of fact in order to pull you over or to issue a subpoena or whatever it happens to arrest you, right? Arrest warrant. I don't know about such things, thankfully. So That's their job, is to fact find. So what we say is, instead of the intelligible principle test, what is the test? So we say the executive branch may engage in fact finding. Does the statute assign to the executive only the responsibility to make factual findings? Does it set forth that the executive must consider and the criteria against which to measure them? And most importantly, did Congress, not the executive branch, make the policy judgment? The intelligible principle the Constitution demands is a traditional rule that Congress may leave the executive responsibility to find facts and fill up the details, quote unquote. That's where we start to get into problems with reasonable and necessary. They start to fill in the details on their own. They take limit of gathering of all people in the health law and say 6 foot distance. You've got to wear masks. You've got to have a vaccine. You've got to have a sign-in sheet. You can't buy paint. You can't motorboat or whatever the hell that other stuff was. There's a curfew, right? Limiting the gathering of all people for any reason now says that there's a curfew. You can gather in this many people at this time, but after this time, you can't gather, period. With zero facts to say that there's any evidence to suggest that limiting the gathering of people after such time of day actually has any effect on COVID, right? That would be some sort of fact that the executive branch could point to, but they just they never did that either. So really what we're looking to do is have them reevaluate how they actually interpret the laws specifically coming from the executive branch. These executive agencies in the state that basically get to make their own rules. We want to have them re-examine that. We want to have them say there is no such thing as a proper delegation. This was an illegal delegation. This was an illegal delegation. The EPA ruling on carbon emissions, the OSHA ruling on vaccine mandates, these are all starting to wedge themselves over into the lawmaking process combined with the power, the state power, to arrest somebody, to find somebody, to do all these things. They should not be. So what's happening with our pie is the pieces are kind of getting out of whack, right? You know, in so much so is that if we had a fourth piece of the pie, as we suggest, as the administrative state, but it is in this executive branch. So we are fundamentally going back to the Michigan Constitution, framed by the U.S. Constitution, that simply says the powers of each branch are vested only in that branch. There is no divestiture. There is no lending those things to another branch. None of that stuff. It is very plain and simple. You can't wiggle your way out of this language, as we've seen so many of these other cases do. This takes it back to very black and white. Did they have the authority to make this? No, they did not. It is literally that simple. There's a lot of pages in there to explain how simple this is, but the majority of that is case after case after case, all from recent history, that are saying the same thing. But what's more important is, as the executive branch and administrative agencies get more and more power, this is the single way to rein in executive power, right? Michigan has seen it so badly in the last couple of years with the EPGA and the lockdowns and then the health law copycat doing the same thing, actually even more so than the EPGA did. So when we talk about trying to ban gas stoves and we talk about trying to mandate certain things for employers to do, those all need to be made in the legislative branch, right? They go through their process and then the executive branch can sign off on it, or they can kick it back and do what they have to do to get two-thirds majority, whatever they have to do. There are remedies for that. They should not be making their own rules. We're taking it back to the most simple thing. In Michigan right now, there is the trifecta of power, right? So any of these things that could come about are going to be very difficult to get lawmakers to pass anything to rein in, especially the current administration's power. This isn't about politics, but the dynamic with these two branches of government right now are very, very important. and the judicial needs to step in and check them both, because it's not just the executive. The legislature gave the executive branch this permission back in 1976 or whenever that law, the health law, was passed. They gave them too much power. The judicial branch has an opportunity now to step in and say, let's put a brake on these things. The people need to have a say in what is happening in our state. This is the single easiest way to get this done without having to go through the legislative process, without having executive orders signed by the governor, none of that stuff. The justices need to take this case, look at it in its plain language, and from the simple text of the United States Supreme Court. It's coming from the top down. This is what needs to happen. And this can be the model, this fact-finding, this can be the model for other states to use to rein in these agencies that just have way, way, way too much power. They're important agencies. Not saying we got to get rid of the Liquor Commission. Not saying the DNR doesn't have an important role in our state. It's certainly, they certainly do. But it's limited. We've got to get back to limited. Limited government. Limit what they can do. Limit what they can do. Limit what they can do so we don't get tyranny. That's what it is all about at the end of the day. Thank you guys for tuning in. Hopefully I didn't ramble on too much. Be sure to like, subscribe, smash that follow button, smash that subscribe button. We're on Rumble, we're on YouTube, Spotify, all the platforms, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, everything that's crazy. Again, go back and look at Lawsuit 101 from a few episodes ago. This will make this a little bit more sense, but this is the next step. We just issued this petition about a week ago, so we'll see what happens. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you soon.